He said, I'm writing, he said, are you reading my books? Well, Prabhupada, we're distributing your books, but we don't read them. Acha? There's a famous discussion he had with book distributors. So how are you, book distribution, very good, how are you doing? So you're doing very nicely. So are you reading my books? Silence. Tripurari, are you reading the books? Yes, Prabhupada, some. And then some other one, I forget this one. Pragosh. Pragosh, are you reading books? But he's a big book distributor. Well, Prabhupada, not too much. I'm distributing a lot of them. Because he's a salesman by karma. Now he's selling real estate or something. Or maybe, I think he's doing books a little bit also, doing both. But he has a family to support and whatnot. He's a salesman. It's his karma. So he can sell anything. Sell his grandmother. He had to. So he sold Prabhupada's books. Okay, it was good. It's called dovetailing. You're a good talker. Some people are good talkers and good salesmen. You give them books, they'll sell it. You give them paintings, they'll sell it. You give them posters, they'll sell it. You give them, you know, toothpicks, they'll sell it. You give them a pack of cigarettes, they'll sell it. They'll sell anything. Right? You give them a lid of, you know, whatever, they'll sell that. Right? Legal, illegal, it doesn't matter. They're salesmen. So he said, you have to read my books. So if we read Prabhupada's books, and then Prabhupada said, I'm writing these books for you, for my disciples. Especially my purports. My purports are my devotional ecstasies. My Bhaktivedanta, my ecstasies are these purports. I'm in ecstasy when I'm writing these purports. And they're for you to learn and follow. So here's what he says in the purport to this verse. Do not expect honor, but offer all respect to others. Always chant the holy name of the Lord Krishna. And within your mind, render service to Radha and Krishna. So here's what he says in the purport. A person in the renounced order of life should never indulge in either hearing or talking about Gramyakata, village life. He should not eat palatable dishes, since that is unfit for a person in the renounced order. He should show respect to others, but should not expect respect for himself. In this way, one should chant the holy name of the Lord and think of how to serve Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan. So, there's 75 sannyasis in our movement, and moreover, practically speaking, they're officially, externally, sannyasis. But Prabhupada said that, he even coined the term, he said, our grihasthas are also sannyasis. And they're also Goswamis. When he told Gurudas and Yamuna, he said, you should live in Vrindavan as Goswamis. They were married. You should live like the Goswamis. So our brahmacharis, our brahmacharinis are also sannyasis. They're celibate. They're renounced. They're not engaged in Gramyakata. They're trying to be serious. They're not trying to eat palatable food stuff. Maybe Sunday feast. Well, you know, they eat rice, dalja, pottage. They're the same, practically speaking. So then that means that this verse and this purport, especially the purports, are for them also. So it says that one should chant the holy name of the Lord and think of how to serve Radha and Krishna Vrindavan. So Prabhupada's telling us, don't, as we heard in this discussion here, from the beginning, we should not do mechanical chanting. We should not do yantra nam sankirtan. We should do prem nam sankirtan. Prem nam sankirtan, which we've already mentioned, which is exactly what Prabhupada is saying in this purport. We should think of Radha and Krishna and Vrindavan when we chant. Think of their pastimes. Think of their form. Then thinking of that will create the prem within us. Prabhupada is telling us, he wrote this book in 1975, 21 years ago. So imagine if you're following these teachings for 21 years and chanting like that, where would you be now? You may very well be in Vrindavan. And maybe just thinking of Radha and Krishna when you're chanting and speaking about them. And there's so much power. So on one level, Prabhupada did teach Raghunuga Bhakti in his books, because Chaitanya Charitamrita is all about Raghunuga Bhakti. That's what Lord Chaitanya came to teach. So how can you avoid it? But on another level, he didn't sit down and say, okay, today we're having a class in Raghunuga Bhakti, class number one. Roll the tapes. Because everybody say, what? Raghunuga? What's that? Rag what? A rag, that's the floor. They clean the floor, Prabhupada, with a rag. And you had to show us how to do it, because we didn't even know how to clean the floor properly with a rag. Raghunuga? What is this Raghunuga? Raghunugat? That's some candy or something? Ragnut? It's a candy bar or something? Ragnut or something? So we weren't ready to have formal classes. But what Everyone sees according to his adhikar. You see according to your vision. A man who needs glasses, he looks, everything's out of focus. A man who's blind sees nothing. He hears the world. He doesn't see the world. A man who has perfect eyes, he sees so much color and everything. But you see according to your knowledge. You see according to your qualification. So you see Prabhupada's books according to your purity, according to what you can see, what you can see. Like many birds are there. Some fly high in the sky. Everyone can say they're a bird. The sparrow is a bird. Yeah, Madhurya Kadambya. Yeah, that's the phenomenon of as we actually become purified by performing the basic practices of Aidi Bhakti, we awaken the capacity to perceive what's in front of our nose. We start to see it. And when we get free from ignorance and passion, and we come to a platform of goodness, and then devotion starts to awaken within us gradually, then we can actually look back in these books and say, my God, what is there? There's so much there. And when Prabhupada gave us a Chaitanya Charitamrita, he gave us a transcendental bomb. He used to say these books are like bombs, and so we had a very aggressive external World War II consciousness about it. Yeah, bombs! We're going to blow up the Maya, we're going to blow up the demons, you know, chop those bombs, B-52s, rockets, nuke them, bomb them. You know, it's a very external conception of bombs, you know, because bombs, kill those demons, drop the hit them on the head with a bomb. But actually, bomb means something else. Blow away your misconceptions, blow away your Maya, blow away your illusions about what is bhakti and what is Krishna, what you are. These books have that power. So when he gave us Chaitanya Charitamrita, he gave us the power. This book has the bomb power to blow us completely out. To blow us completely out of the material conception and right into the Nikunj Leela of Radha and Krishna. So Prabhupada was right when he said, everything's in my books. Everything's there. Like someone might say, do you know there's billions of dollars in your backyard? No, really? I don't believe it. Yeah. You want to give me your backyard? Yeah, take it. So the guy takes your backyard. He puts a wall around your backyard of your house. And he brings in this big machine. Big tower. There's like this big tall tower. Some kind of big metal thing going down like that. And he hooks up some motor. And all of a sudden he hears... And it starts drilling. Some kind of drill, like earth drill. A drill. Going into the earth. Doom, doom, doom. All of a sudden, some kind of black stuff comes out. Some kind of black, thick black stuff starts coming out of the ground. And you're looking over the wall, what is that? It looks like stool or something. What is? And then the guy's putting it in cans, you know. He's putting it in cans, and all these trucks start coming up and loading these trucks and going away. And then he's just living there in the backyard, living in a little hut, you know, under these trucks. And then about a month later, he drives up in a brand new Mercedes, you know. and then you say, what's going on there? What are you doing in my backyard? Oh, I just drilled a hole and I found all this oil and, you know, I'm making, $1,000 a barrel and, you know, I'm starting to make a lot of money. Really, that's all back there in my backyard? Hey, wait a minute. So right here in our backyard, we have unlimited jewels and wealth. Right in these books, right? But we don't know how to get at it. We don't know how to extract it. We don't know how to find it. But it's there. The wealth of love, the wealth of prema is within our heart. It has to be extracted. Oh, the page got turned around. So that's all he said. That's all Mahaprabhu told him. He said he wanted to get Raghunath Das said, I want to go to a different guru. I want to, Swarup Damodar doesn't know that much. I want to go to Lord Chaitanya. So Lord Chaitanya said, all right. No, you should, I told you to stay with him. He'll tell you everything. He said, all right, if you insist, I'll tell you something. Don't talk to materialists. Don't hear Grami Katha. Don't eat opulent food. Don't dress opulently. Don't be proud. Show respect to others. Always chant Hare Krishna and think of the Lord in your heart. Then he says, I told you briefly my instructions. Now if you want to learn more, go back to Swarup Damodar. And then what did he say? And what, he said one last thing. One last thing I want to say, Raghunath Das. What did he say? What was the last thing? He spoke three verses. Before he sent Raghunath back to his original guru, Swarup Damodar, what did he tell Das Goswami? That we said. That's two things. I'm asking if you can guess, because I haven't told you. He says, well, before you go, there's one last instruction. You wanted to have more secret teachings from me? There's one last thing I have to tell you. Yes. One who thinks himself lower than the grass, who is more tolerant than a tree, and who does not expect personal honor, but is always prepared to give respect to others, can very easily always chant the holy name of the Lord. Yate shuni raganata vandila charan, mahaprabhu kaila tanre kripa alingan. Having heard this, Das Goswami offered prayers at the feet of Mahaprabhu, and the Lord with great mercy embraced him. Mahaprabhu again entrusted him to Swarup Damodar. Then Raghunath Das rendered very confidential service with Swarup Damodar Goswami. Wow. This verse is incredible. Puna samarpila tanre saruperastan antaranga sevakare saruperasan Puna samarpila tanre saruperastan antaranga sevakare saruperasan. Mahaprabhu again entrusted him to Swarup Damodar. Thus, Raghunath Das rendered very confidential service. Antaranga sevakare saruperasan. Purport. What is antaranga seva? What is antaranga? Anga means limbs, right? Tribangi. Anga means limbs, and anta means inside, and seva means service. Antaranga seva refers to service performed in one's spiritual body. Swarup Damodar Goswami was formerly Lalita Devi. Das Goswami, who was among his assistants, now also begins to serve Radha and Krishna within his mind. So what's happened here is that Das Goswami was put under the charge of Swarup Damodar. He said, look, I want more. I want something higher. So he went to Mahaprabhu, and Mahaprabhu said, look, man, be humble. He gave him very basic teachings. Be humble, offer respects to others, don't listen to Grami Katha, don't eat opulent foods. Then he sent him back to his guru, Swarup Damodar. And when he went back to his guru, what happened? He realized his own sarup. And then he served Swarup in his Swarup. He served Swarup Damodar in his Antaranga Seva. That's what it says here. He said, Das Goswami, who was... If you read Prabhupada's books very clearly and tightly, it's very powerful. Raghunath Das Goswami, who was among his assistants, now also began to serve Radha and Krishna within his mind. Because until you realize your Swarup, you cannot serve Radha and Krishna within your mind. You can do smaran, you can remember their pastimes, but there's no action, you're not there. And part of what's told by Mahaprabhu's teachings in Raghunuga Bhakti, in your mentally conceived spiritual body, you should ratre dine kare Radha Krishna sevana Vrindavan. You should ratre dine in the day and in the night, you should serve Radha and Krishna in your mind, within your mind, in your mentally conceived spiritual body. So until you've conceived and realized and understood your spiritual body, you can't serve Radha and Krishna within your mind. But now, just by receiving these few teachings from Mahaprabhu, he went back and now he realized. He realized his own sarup, and then he could serve as Rati Manjari or Banomati Manjari or Tulsi Manjari. These are the three names of Das Goswami. It's three names you'll see in Rasa Shastra. Sometimes Banomati, O Banomati, and Radharani says O Banomati or O Tulsi Manjari. Tulsi Devi and Brinda Devi are something else, someone else. But Tulsi Manjari, Rati Manjari, Banumati Manjari are all Das Goswami in his Manjari Roop. Now he began to stir Radha Krishna in his mind. The Acharyas, when they're explaining about the Bhoma Lila of Sri Krishna, there are different aspects which are fulfilled by Bhoma Lila, especially the preaching aspect and liberation and the fulfillment of the sadhya of various sadhakas who attain the goal of their sadhya by entering Bhoma Lila of the Lord, by entering the path, transcendental pastimes of the Lord somewhere where they're going on in the material world. And then there are different categories of personalities that come there. Of course, we're most familiar with the Rishi Chari gopis, you know, the rishis, and during Treta Yuga that were in Dandakaranya forest. And when Ram, Sita, Ram, and Lakshman, and Hanuman were going there, they saw, they were devotees of Gopal. They were in Vatsalya Bhav. They had affection for the Lord in their heart already. Bhakta Vatsalya, they were very affectionate, and the Lord was very affectionate to them. When they saw Ram, when they actually had darshan of the Ram, who's another form of Gopal, who they were worshipping as a sadhaka, they became enamored by the wonderful beauty of the Lord's form. Of course, he wasn't Gopal, he was fully mature, Lord Ram. And so they expressed their minds and hearts to the Lord, because he's within everyone's heart. He knows more intimately ourselves than we know ourselves. And so therefore he makes arrangements. Because what we have, the problem we have as sadhakas or as conditioned souls is that we have many, there are many persons within us. Once there was an article in the BTG, it was called The Demon Within Us. It's talking about the demons. How in previous ages, which you'll read in Bhagavatam, the demons were on different planets. There was intergalactic wars, like Star Wars. It was a Star Wars idea. So there was like devotees, like we have the devatas and the asuras and asuras. So the heavenly planets, and then there's hellish planets. So the one planet would fight the other planet. So the demigods would live on one planet in Swarga, and then the demons in the lower heavenly planets, or wherever the subterranean heavenly planets, they would try to fight for control of the universe or take over each other's planet. So that was in Satyuga. And then, of course, in Treta Yuga, it's explained that the demons and devotees were living on the same planet, and on the same planet, you see you have a Ravana, then you have Ramachandra. So in Ayodhya, there are so many devotees living with a Ramachandra. But then a little bit further south, on the same planet, in Sri Lanka, there's Ravana and all his anti-Ram friends. So then a big battle came up and became the Ramayana. So then that's in Treta Yuga. Then they say in Dwapara Yuga, the demons are in the same family. And the proof of that is the fratricidal war between the Pandavas and the Kauravas. They were brothers, cousin brothers, same family. So some were the Satvatas, Satvata dynasty, and those followers of Krishna, they were the devotees. But then Duryodhan and Dhritarashtra's other 100 sons, they were opposed to Krishna, opposed to the Pandavas. So they split. They were really one family. They come from one lineage. And they split and had this war called Battle of Kurukshetra. So there in that age in Dwapara Yuga, the demons and devotees were in the same family. Now what happens in Kali Yuga? So in Kali Yuga, the demons and devotees are in one body. It's becoming narrower and narrower. So there was a very nice article written called The Demon Within Us. And so therefore, we can understand that in this age of Kali, the sadhaka, he faces many different identities, struggling for supremacy of his consciousness, and struggling to take control of his life and send it in a particular direction, either towards the Lord as a favorable sura or devotee, or away from the Lord. There's only two directions one can go in, towards the Lord or away from the Lord, bahirmukh or antarmukh. So, bahirmukh means the face, the mukh is turned away from the Lord towards the external energy, and then we become nityabaddha, conditioned soul from time immemorial, and antarmukh means the face is turned inside, then you become enter Krishna's antaranga shakti, or the spiritual energy, and become jiva mukta, or you become nitya mukta, eternally liberated jiva. So the sadhaka, he has to oftentimes make a choice. So Krishna, he knows what is our inner heart. He knows the heart of every living entity. So he sees what is the direction that this soul really wants. And he makes arrangements. If this soul wants the direction of forgetfulness and wants to be completely absorbed in the external energy of the Lord, then the Lord very conveniently arranges for forgetfulness. We can remember something if the Lord allows us, and we can forget everything if the Lord allows us. It's explained in the Bhagavad Gita, the what's that verse? 15th chapter, 15th verse. What's that verse? Sarvasya Chaham, 15, chapter 15, verse 15. Sarvasya Chaham Riddhi Sannivishto. Matasmatir Gyanam Afohanamcha Vedascha Savamaham Eva Vedyo Vedanta Krit Vedavidevacham. Krishna is telling that from me becomes Smritir and Apohanam. Savasyacham Riddhi Sani Vishto. Vishto, or I am situated in the heart of everyone. And Matasmatir Gyanam Apohanamcha. From me comes apohanam, forgetfulness, or smritir. Smriti means smaranam, means remembrance. If they want to forget the Lord, he'll make all arrangements to forget him. So Lord Ramachandra knew the inner heart of these Dandakaranya sages, that they were Gopal Bhaktas, but they felt some feelings for conjugal feelings, Madhurya feelings, and Swakya. They wanted to be, felt attracted to be like, to have Ram as their wife. So he made arrangements. So in next life, they became gopis in Vrindavan, Dandakaranya sages. And then the personified Vedas, who were offering prayers to Lord Vishnu in Shvetadweep, they also expressed a desire like that. They admired the position of Lakshmi. She was always massaging his feet, and they thought it'd be nice to be like Lakshmi. The personified Vedas got the chance to become gopis and massage the feet of Krishna and hold the feet of Krishna on their breasts and like that. So it's also told, because we're speaking about how today is Valmadeva's appearance day, that there are 20 different categories of personalities in the universe who appear in Krishna Lila and Dvapara Yuga to fulfill their desire for a relationship with the Lord. So one of those categories is the residents of Sutala Loka, because Bali Maharaj, when this past time, Vamanadev came as a brahmachari, very young boy, very beautiful young boy, dressed with deer skin and danda and kamandalu, water pot and stick and everything, and deer skin and matted logs, and very beautiful Krishna himself. And then he went to Bali Maharaj's kingdom, Sutala Loka. And he begged 3 steps of land, and of course he became known as Tripad Vibhuti. Well, Tripad means 3 feet, Vibhuti means the manifestation. We have in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, is called Vibhuti Yoga chapter, the opulences of the Absolute. Chapter 10, Vibhuti Yoga Sambhad. And then there's Virata Rupa Sambhad and all these different chapters are there. So this Tripad Vibhuti, the whole opulence of the universe, he covered in 3 steps. So one step he covered the whole earth planet and then the heavenly planets, and there was where else? And he poked his foot to the universe and Ganges came in. And then Bali Maharaj, he had surrendered his head for his last step. In 2 steps he covered the whole universe, and the 3rd step he put on his head. So at that time, there was different things happened. Bali Maharaj's sister, at first she was very attracted to Vamanadeva. That was such a beautiful boy. I would like to hold this boy in my breast and feed him my breast milk. I nourish him as my own son. He's so beautiful. I wonder what he was like when he was a baby. And so she had these motherly feelings. Vatsalya Bhav. And she was feeling like that. And then, in a short time, when she saw how this innocent young boy embarrassed and humiliated her brother, Bali Maharaj, by putting his feet on his head and everything, she became very angry. What? What's this boy doing to my brother? My brother's King Bali. He's a Maharaj. I can't stand for this. My own family, my brother. This boy, I'm going to kill this boy. I'm going to kill him. So she, within her heart, she expressed this Kali Yuga conception of the demon within me and the devotee within me. So how to adjust? Because that wasn't Kali Yuga, it was a different age. So then Krishna adjusted. Because Krishna, he can adjust all contrasts. All contrasts and all differences have their harmony and have their unity in the form of Krishna. That's why Krishna is known as Akila Rasamrita Murti. He's Akila Rasamrita Murti. It's explained in Nectar Devotion that Krishna is the very form of a universe, Akila Rasamrita Murti. He's a form of unlimited relationships and rasas. He is Rasaraj. He's the king of all rasas. And Radharani is Mahabhav. She's the emporium of the most ecstatic expression of rasas, which is condensed in the Mahabhav and the madness of divine love, which he expresses more than anyone else can. So she's the queen of ecstasy personified, known as Mahabhav Swarupini. Her very form, her very rupa, her form, her swarup, her very own form, is the very expression of this divine madness and love, known as Mahabhav. So Krishna, he adjusted the desires of Bali Maharaj's sister, and she came in this Dwapara Yuga and appeared as Putana. So Putana got her desire fulfilled to offer her breast to Krishna, or Vamanadeva. Vamanadeva is also Krishna. And at the same time, she got her desire fulfilled to kill Krishna, kill Vamanadeva. Of course, it wasn't mentioned this morning, but it's some very sweet aspects of Vamanadeva Leela, which end up in Vrindavan, because we want to always keep our minds in Vrindavan, somehow or other. By the mercy of the Acharyas, we try to stay there. All roads lead to Radhacharan Seva. All roads lead to Raman. They have an expression in English, all roads lead to Rome. Previously, 2,000 years ago, the Roman Empire extended all over the universe, or all over the world, rather. And they built highways, and they all kind of like went off ultimately back to Rome, one way or the other. So all roads lead to Radha Raman, the personality gives pleasure to Krishna, Srimati Radharani. So Bali Maharaj's sister became Putana, and she smeared her breast with poison. She came to kill Krishna, but within her heart, she still had this desire to be his mother, because she's offering her breast, but her bhav was mixed. The sweet Amrit, milk is known as Amrit. In Ayurveda, milk is called Amrit. So Amrit is that which takes away death. Mritu means death. It's called Mritu Loka, planet of death. So Amrit means without death. The milk is that substance which takes away death. It goes against death. So love of Krishna is eternal. And the desire to serve Krishna in any one of the five rasas is a liberating factor, a liberating force, which frees one from the cycle of samsara, frees one from the world of mrityu, world of death. So her desire was Amrit, was very nectarine. She had a nectarine desire in her heart. Her heart was full of Amrit. So milk represents that Amrit. The milk of her breast represents the Amrit, or the nectar of her Vatsalya Bhav, her desire to eternally love and serve Krishna as a mother. But she covered that Amrit with this poison, Vish. Poison is Vish. So the poison on top, but underneath the milk is there. So Krishna took this poison and threw it away. He said, I don't want this. I don't. Threw it away. And he accepted the Amrit of her affection. he accepted her milk, and then of course he took out her life errors. He extracted the demoniac desire from within her, demoniac desire to kill God, and accepted her nectarine desire to love and serve God as mother. And she got promoted to be a datri in the spiritual world. She became the nurse of Krishna. So this is all in relation to Vamana Deva's pastime. Now, that was one thing that was happening during this Vamana Leela. Another thing that was happening is that the other ladies, aside from Putana, who had this mixed feeling, they saw Vamana Deva and they thought, he's a very beautiful boy. What will he be like when he grows up? Just like sometimes we see that we have friends and they have very attractive sons or very attractive daughters. And someone might think, boy, he'll be a really handsome man when he grows up. You know, dark hair, beautiful eyes and face. And you can just imagine, how handsome he'll be when he grows up. Or you see some beautiful girl, how beautiful she'll be when she grows up. So these, in Bali Maharaj's kingdom, we're discussing something about Vamana Deva. Today's the appearance of Vamana Deva. We fasted yesterday for his appearance. So in Bali Maharaj's kingdom, these ladies, the very princesses and different ladies there, they gazed upon the beauty of the dwarf Brahmin, young boy, Vamana Deva. And so he's so handsome, so beautiful, so attractive. They felt some feelings in their hearts. It'll be nice if he grows up. We like to meet him when he grows up. Because they were princesses, they weren't married yet. So they were thinking, like looking at him, but thinking something different. And so Vamana Deva, he understood that. They had this desire within their heart that if he was a little older and a little taller, if you were just a little older and a little taller, because you're a dwarf, then I think I could be your queen and you could be my king. So Vamana Deva said, fine, very well, I accept your desire. And they became gopis in Braj, these princesses in Sutala Loka. They took the form of, they got gopi roop in Braj, and they entered the Rasa dance and enjoyed the Rasa Leela with Krishna. So this is the mercy of Vamana Deva. So Krishna, in any form, he can fulfill any desire, whether he appears as a baby in the lap of Putana, he has unlimited power to do whatever is required. So that's a little something about Vamana Deva. So we're discussing some of the principles of Raghunuga Bhakti, and we know very well in ISKCON since 1975 when the Archana Padati was first published. Archana Padati means the prayers, padati means the prayers that one, the prayers and meditations that accompany the Archana Marg, the worship of the deity, was published by the GBC and distributed to the temples, and all the devotees started executing different limbs of Archana Marg. And they're continuing to this day in the deity worship book recently released by the GBC of ISKCON. And in there, all pujaris are aware that there are different features of purifying oneself and preparing oneself to worship the form of the Lord. And one of those practices called Bhuta Shuddhi. Shuddhi means pure, like Shuddha Bhakata Charanarena, pure devotee. So Bhuta means the elements, this Maha Pancha Bhuta. The Pancha Bhuta, or the great elements, are Bhumirapo Nalo Vayu, earth, water, fire, air, ether. These are the five great elements. Panchabhuta, Mahapanchabhuta, and then there's so many subtle elements. So in this way, we have to purify the elements. We have to purify the body and the mind. Because our bodies and our minds are not suitable instruments to serve the transcendental form of the Lord. Because our bodies and minds are material. They're Bhuta. They're Ashud Bhuta. Our Bhutas are Ashud. They're impure. We have to become purified. Well, how do you purify the earth? How do you purify the water, the air, the ether, and the mind, intelligence? Actually, there's Ashta Prakriti. There's eight elements, gross and subtle, that formulate the body. It's longer, no? Oh, that's as long as it is. Okay. So the eight elements that constitute this body. So we have to transform this body and mind to something acceptable to the Lord. Because the Lord certainly doesn't want to accept a bag of stool, as we often refer to the body. Right? The body is simply a bag of stool. Mucus, bile, air, stool, and urine. And that's constituted of these eight elements, these bhutas. So in this bhuta shuddhi, there are meditations given. Naham vipuro na cha narapitin apivaisho. In other words, we get free from the identity of this varna or ashram by meditation, by chanting the shloka. I am Gopi Bhartu Padakamali Radasana Dasana Dasana. I am a servant of the servant of the master, the gopis. And then, in other words, we try to fix our identity by meditation, by mantra and prayer, fix our identity on our sarup. This is the meaning of Bhuta Shuddhi, is to think of your sarup in Gaur Lila, if you're attracted to Gaur Lila, or let's say in Krishna Lila, to enter with your mind, meditate on your transcendental form in the particular ras which you are inclined to serve the Lord. Then once that identity is fixed, once that purity of consciousness and identity and ego is fixed, then one begins to do deity service in Archan Marg. This is the process you know, you must be knowing, you read the deity worship book. This is, and this is on all levels. This is within, Bhuta Shuddhi is there within Archan Marg of the Vaidhi Sadhana, and it's also in the Archan Marg of the Raganuga Sadhana, because they're both our sadhana. So the Raganuga Bhakta is also doing puja. His puja is Manasi puja, within the mind. And the Vaidhi Bhakta, he's doing puja externally, to the Murti, Vaidhi Sadhana. But both do Bhuta Shuddhi. So the ultimate expansion or expression of Bhuta Shuddhi is to identify with one, to meditate on one's spiritual form. On the lower level, on the Vaidhi level, one will just meditate, I am a servant. Gopi Bhartu, this verse is given. Gopi Bhartu Padakamalira Dasana Das, I am a servant, I am a servant, I am a servant. And of course, that identity we're supposed to be fixing within ourselves all the time. This is the process of brainwashing. Washing the brain. The brain now has, our brain has a conception that sits within our brain. The conception is, I am God, 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 I am God. I am perfect, I am powerful, I am happy. Ishwaroham, Ishwaroham, Aham Bhogi, Siddham, Balavan Sukhi. This is called Asura Sambad. Asura Sambad. This is the conception, the brain, the mentality of the Asura, the demon. Ishwaroham Aham Bhogi, I am the Ishwara, I am the controller. Aham Bhogi, I am the enjoyer. Ishwaroham Aham Bhogi, Siddham, I am perfect. Balavan, I am strong, powerful, beautiful, rich, opulent, well-placed, well-positioned, influential. Ishwaroham aham bhogi, siddham balavan sukhi. And I'm very happy. My money makes me happy, my power makes me happy, my position makes me happy, my beauty makes me happy, my controlling ability makes me happy. So this is Asura Sambad. So the demons are always thinking like this. I am God. Because God is the supreme controller, Bhoktaram, Yagatapasam, Sarvalokamaheshwaram, Suridam, Sarvabhutanam, Gyatramam, Shantamarsati. Fifth chapter, Gita, chapter, verse 29. Only Krishna is Bhoktaram. He's the supreme enjoyer, supreme controller, supreme friend, supreme proprietor of everything. He owns everything, he controls everything, he creates everything. So when one approaches the Lord's lotus feet for service, he is given the Maha Mantra, the chant, with a conception. I am your servant, I am your servant, I am your servant. So one is meant to wash his brain, wash his mind from this misconception or from this Asura Sambhad to the identity of a devotee, the ego of a devotee, the mind of a devotee. Ego of a devotee thinks, I am Krishna's servant, dasosmi. I am Krishna's servant. Gopi Bhartu Padakamalir. I am a servant of the servant of the servant. So chanting Hare Krishna, we're chanting 25,000 times every day this prayer. Please, Krishna, I am your servant. I am your servant. I am your servant. Let me serve you. Radha, let me serve you. Krishna, let me serve you. 25,000 times. So imagine if you washed your clothes 25,000 times a day. They would become very clean. So we're supposed to be washing our minds every day 25,000 times with this conception. But somehow or other, we wash our minds one day 25,000 times, and then the next day our mind says, you're a God, you're a God, you're a God. You're the controller, you're the center, you're the universe, you're everything. And complete forgetfulness. So the washing was not very effective. You didn't use any soap. You didn't use any water. You just shook your clothes 25,000 times, up in the air, up and down. And you say, hey, why aren't they clean? I said, well, you didn't use any water. At least use some water. You didn't use any soap. You're shaking 25,000 times all day your clothes and just throwing around the air. So you're shaking your mind, or you're trying to wash your mind without any water, without any soap. So the mantra has to be chanted with conception, proper conception and proper understanding. Like that. So this is the practice of changing identity. So in Raghunuga Bhakti, the sadhaka separates himself from the physical body and senses by identifying himself with the imaginary transcendental body. He's using the word imaginary. Imaginary means conceived within the mind. It's not imaginary. It's within the soul. There's a particular ras that the Lord wants him to express, as we mentioned before, and that takes shape according to your meditation in a particular form. And that is your mentally conceived spiritual body. This is called Bhuta Shuddhi. Do you know anything about deity worship? Do you ever read any books? So you know this thing called Bhuta Shuddhi. Before you do puja, you're supposed to meditate, naham vispro, chant verses like naham vispro, nacha, napri. I'm not a Brahmin, I'm not a Kshatriya, I'm not this or that, I'm a servant of Gopis. So this is also done in Raghunuga and in Sadhana and Vaidhisadhana. The sadhaka's identification with the transcendental body, however, does not take place at once. This chapter is called The Transcendental Body. I'm trying to understand, what is my sarupa? How do I develop it? How do I find it? How do I realize it? He cannot establish direct personal relationship with Bhagavan and serve him lovingly and spontaneously, as is done in Ragatmika Bhakti. Ragatmika Bhakti is that bhakti which the eternal servants of the Lord possess in Vrindavan. Although Raghunuga Bhakti is generally described as spontaneous, it is not spontaneous in the real sense. It is only imitation of the spontaneous love of the eternal residents of Vrindavan who are existing in Ragatmika Bhakti. That's why we say Rag Anuga, Anugata. And we say, E Neva Dhanadara Sakir Anugata Karo. Is it? Tulsi prayer? E Neva Dhanadharo. Sakir Anugata. We're saying, O Tulsi Devi, O Brinda Devi, please bestow your mercy upon me. My heart is expressing a desire. I want to become Saki Anugata. I want to follow in the footsteps. Anu means to follow, and Anugata means the goal. Gati, Param Gati. What is the Param Gati? What is the supreme goal? Saki Anugata. I want, Tulsi Devi, O Brinda Devi, please bless me that I become a follower of the coward dance of the Braja. Please grant me the privilege of devotional service. Seva Adhikar, D.A. D.A. means don or to give. Give me the Adhikar, give me the eligibility, the qualification. Seva Adhikar, D.A. Koro Nita Dasi. Please give me the, grant me the privilege of the devotional service. Make me eligible, make me qualified to serve you. And become your maidservant, Nijadasi, Koro Nijadasi. So, Raga Anuga means, Anuga means to follow the rag. Anugata means to follow in the footsteps. Sakir Anugata. So, Raga Anuga means to follow the rag, follow the attachment, follow the love of who? Of the rag Atmikas. The Atmikas, Atma means body, mind, heart. Atmika. And we have Radha and Radhika. So Atmika means complete. Those servants of the Lord, those lovers of the Lord, that are Tade Katma Rupa, Tade Katma, Tade Eka Atma, Ve'etat ekatma rupa. Their form is completely absorbed in the loving service of the Lord. Body, mind, and words engaged in the service of the Lord. So those are the eternal servants of the Lord. Radharani, the gopis, the gopas. They are ragatmika bhaktas. Nanda Baba, Yashoda, Sudam, Sridam, Lita Vishaka, Radharani. So we're following them. That's what Raganuga means, to follow theirs. So it's not spontaneous. They are spontaneously just expressing their love from moment to moment in newer and different ways. We're trying to follow that mood and cultivate that mood. That's Raganuga. In Raganuga Bhakti, the devotee only imitates the particular mode or mood of the Ragatmika Bhakti that suits his natural inclination. As long as the devotee stays in the physical body, he performs Shravan and Kirtan and observes the other rules of Vaidhi Bhakti outwardly. But inwardly, he imagines himself to be in the transcendental body appropriate for the type of bhakti or devotional service which he is naturally inclined, and to be serving Krishna day and night through that body. Madhya Lila, chapter 22, verse 157. Well, let's see. Sanatana Shiksha, chapter 22 of Madhya Lila. Chaitanya Charitamrita, verse 150. Ishte sarasiki raga param avishtata bhavet tanmayi ya bhaved bhakti satra ragatmikodita. This is from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, this verse. It's quoted because that was written first. That was written quite a bit before this book, 30, 40 years before this book was written. So Kaviraj had studied it and he quoted it properly, in appropriate places. When one becomes attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his natural inclination